Hello and welcome to another Conversations at the Summit, brought to you by Climb UK. I'm Tanya Arnold, and on this episode, we're going to chat to a founder who found himself in the process.
I was one of the only people that looked like me, and I hate to play the victim card. I'm not one for that, but sometimes you're in a situation where you're like, oh, this seems unfair. Everyone else got a promotion, it felt like, all my peer group, and I didn't, and no one could actually explain to me why I didn't get it because I got good ratings. It shaped me massively. I don't look at people and think, you're talented, you're not. I look at people and think, how are you talented? Because everyone is talented in some way. We always see something amazing in people. I have a positive view of people until they mess up, but generally a positive view about people, and it makes me happier as well.
Well, Cecil Agelo of Foundervine, welcome. Many other things that we will get to as well alongside him, as ever, is Gordon Bateman. Cecil, I was struck by your LinkedIn that you said, among other things, you have a passion for operational efficiency, which is not a phrase I've necessarily come across, and you love data and analytics. When did you find out that about yourself?
Yeah, I know operational efficiency sounds quite corporate-y, doesn't it?
Quite unsexy, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but, you know, at heart, I'm a very systematic person. And I remember when I was probably about 11, my dad got a computer. And most kids, when they get on a computer, they go straight for the games. And for some reason, I came across a program on the computer that was really interesting. And that was Lotus Notes. Now, that sounds really, really, really bad, really boring, actually. But something struck me about being able to organize your notes, being able to organize stuff and knowing where things are. And I didn't have anyone to talk to about this at the time. And I thought it was just normal that most people really like, you know, organizing stuff. I found out later that it's not normal. But I've always had that. I've always had that ability to just look at things and make a system out of them and de-piece systems as well. And that led me into understanding technology, building computers, and also understanding how data moves from one place to another. And I also realized that data is super important when it comes to making decisions because it gives you the information you need to be able to make sensible decisions, even when sometimes you don't have the full picture. Sometimes data really gets you an understanding that other people do not. And I've been in many situations where I've had the data and other people haven't. And I've told them things and they've been like, no, you're wrong. And I've shown them and they've been like, oh my goodness. It's really a big passion of mine because it helps me in my day life and also in business sense as well. Just allows you to cut through to what's working, what's not working.
You know a bit about Lotus Notes, don't you, Gordon?
From a former
life of yours.
Oh, no.
My first ever job when I was sponsored by ICI was to evaluate Lotus Notes. And I got accused of playing games because everybody else had green screen. So it's quite amusing when you're talking about it that it was instead of playing games. But there you go. That's my age for you.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I was the only computer in the office that had a Windows interface. Everyone else was green screen on a mainframe.
Oh, okay.
So a guy comes from like right at the other side of the office and says, you're not allowed to play games. I went, no, this is the future.
Wow, so, I can't even imagine that.
Incredible.
Unbelievable. Thanks, Gordon.
You've just aged both of us massively. Yeah, Cecil, thank you very much for that early doors.
Green screen, like the Matrix.
Right? Yeah, so what was your route into business?
My route into business, so I did biomedical sciences as a degree. I thought I was going to be a doctor because I had one auntie and her knee was quite bad. And she said, you're going to be a doctor so you can fix my knee. And so for some reason that was stuck in my head. Like, I like science and, you know, doctor seems like a good route to go down. But when I did my work experience, which was at, very prestigious London hospital on Harley Street, I realized that I am so bad at this. The reason is, you know, once again, my systematic nature, you know, comes in and there's a certain level of care you need to be a doctor. You need to care about people's perceptions of things and feelings as well. And I do, but sometimes I have trouble expressing that. So I did a whole biomedical science degree. I went to do my work experience and realized, oh no, this is not for me. And I thought, oh my goodness, like I've just wasted 4 years of my life. But luckily I had other skills. And one of those skills was tech. So I've been brought up on a computer. My cousin did computer studies at university. He actually built a computer for my dad in our house. And I watched him do it piece by piece, you know, from the motherboard to the power supply unit to the floppy disk drive and any installed Windows. You know, disk by disk, you know, with a operating interface, right, which is very interesting to me. I was like, oh my goodness, like people can actually build these things. So that got me interested in tech. And so I used my biomedical science degree plus my interest in tech to apply for a job at a company that makes software for the NHS. And they really loved me because I could speak to the guys in the lab and understand what they were saying about the tests they were doing. But also I was good on the computers. And that got me into technology. And then I moved from there into technology consulting with one of the big consulting firms. And from there, I really got my eyes opened about business and how business happens. And very soon after that, I specialized mainly in data and went to consult with some of the biggest financial institutions in the world. My eyes just constantly being open to new things. And, you know, it's like dominoes, you know, one face is three and the other one is one. And then the other one is one and then the other one's four. And then, you know, from a science degree, I've come into business and startups. So yeah, it's been a journey of learning, but I'm really glad that I've done it that way because I feel like I've had more fundamental understanding as opposed to someone just teaching you and telling you this is the way it's supposed to be.
Well, you have worked for some big corporations. What was that like for you?
I didn't know what to expect. I thought that I wouldn't be good enough to work at some of these big companies because, frankly, the application process and the interview process, they're really hard. At the time, I didn't have a lot of confidence. And, you know, being from an underrepresented background as well, I just thought, like, who would want to hire me? I didn't really understand what my value was. But I feel like they saw something in me when I went to an interview with a large consulting firm and they hired me. And I thought, oh my goodness, I've been hired. Like, I do not know anything about this job. I'm going to have to like learn very quickly so that I don't look incompetent on the job. It turns out that it was okay. And actually, you didn't really need to know too much. You just needed to have the ability to figure stuff out. And I think I learned and I recognized that I wasn't on the level of the other people. So I had to put in more work. And that's what I did. I did it on my evenings and weekends. Every time I was in a meeting, someone said something I didn't understand, I would always write it down and learn it like thoroughly afterwards. And so that helped me get from one stage to another. Challenge with corporate environment is I was one of the only people that looked like me. And that can sometimes be uncomfortable, especially when you feel like you're getting unfair treatment. And I hate to play the victim card. I'm not one for that. But sometimes you're in a situation where you're like, oh, this seems unfair. I was in a situation where I'd done really well that year. I was expecting a promotion. Everyone else got a promotion. It felt like all my peer group and I didn't. And no one could actually explain to me why I didn't get it because I got good ratings. And I really had to do a lot of reflection after that. And very shortly after I left the company, because, you know, I just felt like I wasn't being valued there. But I think from that point forwards, it was up and like my career has been transformed massively since that point. But I did learn something from that experience, which is, you know, if you're from an underrepresented background, you have to actually play the game a bit. You have to be really mindful about how systems work and how you're being perceived. If you don't, you're just going to be in the same place.
But that's wrong, isn't it?
It is wrong, but I think there's lots of things that are wrong about the world, and you can try and change everything and burn out completely, or you can focus on what you can do to maybe make a small change in your life and hopefully be able to make a change in other people's lives. And I think that's a little bit of what I've done in terms of developing myself and then creating something that helps other people.
And so you're just listening to you. I wonder how much that experience of realizing that you were being overlooked, that you were being treated differently, has shaped what you have gone on to do, that what was an unpleasant and a wrong experience has actually shaped who you are and what you've done.
It shaped me massively. I think in positive ways and also in negative ways as well. And I don't really talk about the negative ways that much because I'm a very optimistic person. I like to focus on the positives of things. But it really kind of instilled a work ethic in me that I have to kind of be on some sort of grind. And in my early days, I was on the grind all the time, you know, evenings, weekends, I was always working. And so it meant that when I stopped working evenings and weekends, it felt like I was on a holiday. And I'm not one to glamorize the kind of culture of just overworking. But I do think sometimes you need to put in extra hours to be able to achieve good things. And I think in terms of being overlooked, I would say I now see the value that I had back then. And I can also see it from the perception of other people around me that, you know, I'm from an underrepresented background and maybe they overlook the value quite easily. But there's one thing I think in all people is that there's innate talent. There are innate qualities that are really valuable, but oftentimes they're not cultivated. They're not recognized and they're not brought out. And for me, I don't look at people and think, you're talented, you're not. I look at people and think, how are you talented? Because everyone is talented in some way. And that's why, you know, building Found the Vine with my co-founder, Izzy, we focus on the underrepresented founders. We always see something amazing in people that maybe others can't see because they're too transfixed on, you know, what they look like or what they sound like or where they've come from. And, you know, I think that's something that I really, really, really love about the way I look at people and the world is that I have a positive view of people until they mess up. But generally a positive view about people, and it makes me happier as well.
I think it is a thing, isn't it? People are often just in the wrong place, in the wrong job, in the wrong setting. But sadly, there are those idiots out there who don't have that same view and they don't recognize talent and go at it from a very different perspective.
Yeah.
It's and doing something about that is all of our responsibility, I think.
Yeah. I think it is. And I know you call them idiots, and you know, I think it's easy to feel negative about them, but sometimes when you get behind how they were brought up or how their friend groups have formed or who they've worked with, you see that sometimes they've got external influences that have shaped their views as well. Yeah. And people can change. It's just a case of, again, like finding the right ways to communicate with them. And I really believe that maybe not everyone could be more accepting and inclusive, but the majority of people would be more inclusive if they had more inclusive experiences when they were growing up. And it's just having that experience shaped positively during their earlier years.
But I think you're right, and people, you know, still see this more than ever, and part of a big reason why we created Climb, and I'm glad you're speaking at Climb this year, is that if you put people into groups and mix everything up by default, you broaden people's opinion or you broaden people's outlook. One of the challenges we see is silos being built, you know, and that. And then when people are in a silo, we ran around table a while ago and someone made a comment which was kind of a bit daft. It was, if Gen Z people thought more about their business than they did about their mental health, they'd be more successful. And the room debated it. But then someone sent us an email saying we shouldn't have allowed that person to say that. And it's like, no, you're at that point of that room is you allow them to speak, allow them to share that view, and then give them a counter view in either direction, and opinions change. And by doing that, you can change the way people think. Yeah. And that's what's important, is bringing people together to be able to do that.
I think that's a very good example. And sometimes I think people are often resistant to hear an idea or thought that, you know, goes against what they believe. But dialogue is the way that we can communicate and change each other's minds, or even just have a better understanding of how someone else thinks. Because if we have that understanding, sometimes not that we can accept their behaviors, but we can communicate with them in a different way and make allowances for them. I'm not saying that we need to accept negative behavior, but I do think that dialogue is important and that we need to be a bit more accommodating of other people and all views, and have that debate, because, you know, a lot of people can change when they have reasonable conversations with people that are open to hearing what they think, basically.
So the challenge with a lot of technology, though, isn't it? And like news feeds on your phone or whatever, or on social media, it drives, it reinforces the same view. It doesn't give you the counter view. That's one of the problems, isn't it?
It's so terrible, yeah. And, you know, it's some, because I've seen the rise of social media, as you probably have as well.
I'm too young for that.
And I've just, you know, I remember at university, we used to use Facebook to organize events, and, you know, everyone used to write on people's walls and stuff. And back then, social media was quite harmless. And then all the algorithms started getting better and better and better. And now, like, you know, I was on Instagram the other day and I accidentally clicked an ad for a bag. And then after that point, I'm being advertised all sorts of bags.
Oh, I'm rucksacks. Work rucksacks. Hundreds of them.
I'm like, I just clicked it by accident. But the algorithm's so powerful now that it takes stuff that you look at and really hones down, just like you said, on similar things. And it's really good at doing that. And that's a big challenge for today's world.
And that's why meeting face to face, doing these things live, getting organisations, you know, things like Climb, and getting people from diverse backgrounds together. Those, we've just got to do more of it. People say to me, oh, I'm too busy. Well, you shouldn't be too busy. Just, you'll get a lot of value from meeting people. You know, just one bit of learning, one change of your view is critical.
You're absolutely right. Like, I think things like Climb bring people together and spark connections that probably would never have happened ever, you know, in the virtual world. And creating a safe space, I think, is the most important thing. And I say safe space in the sense that if you're from a different background and you come to an event like Climb, you feel like I'm included, you're more likely to be comfortable, to speak to other people, to investigate different things and just be free. Like, you know, there's events I've been to in my earlier days where I was the only person who looked like me and I felt like it wasn't a safe space, and I didn't necessarily contribute to those events. But I do like the way that Climb has focused on making sure that you bring a variety of people into one space, and also outside of London. I am from London. I love London, but sometimes we need to do stuff in different parts of the country, because that also is another perspective of being more inclusive and being more diverse.
So how did you end up becoming a founder?
That's a very good question. The short answer is it's by accident. As I mentioned, I was in data and analytics, and I used to work with someone that went to go and form their own business in Spain. And they started growing that very successfully. And they met some other people in Spain that were running a larger tech business in Spain. And he gets on the phone to me and says, hey, Cecil, I got some people that want to meet you. They want to invest in a business that you're going to run in the UK. And I was like, okay, cool. That doesn't sound like a scam at all. you know, he somehow managed to get me to come to Spain. And the whole time I was thinking, scam, scam, scam. But, you know.
But Spain's nice.
That was one thing, yeah. Because it was pretty cold in England at that time. And, you know, they paid for my ticket. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go. At least it's going to be like a holiday. And then I'll see the scam and then I'll come back. But no, it was completely not a scam. And these people really believed in me. And they said, we're going to give you some money. We want you to start a business in the UK. We just want you to take a few things from what we're doing in Spain, figure out what is the best service offering we can have in the UK. And basically make money. And I was like, yeah, sure, simple. Of course, I hadn't got an MBA. I didn't really know how to run a business. I had to learn so much, like ridiculous amounts. I bought so many books. I was up at like till midnight just learning stuff. And it felt stressful. And also I felt quite alone as well, because I didn't really have people in my network that I could talk to about building a business. And, you know, when I got this money, I was thinking about spending it on stupid things like merchandise, diaries and stuff. I wasn't actually thinking about how do I go out there and get business. And I think I wasted some money on like an office space, which cost thousands a month. And it was like, just me. And I was like, this doesn't really make any sense. And then I started like really kind of getting down into, okay, so how do I make money? And, you know, the process was really painful, just going out there, business development, hounding people on LinkedIn, sending out messages and getting so much rejection. At times I thought, do you know what? This is a bad idea. I should just go back to my job. But eventually a breakthrough came where I managed to contact someone that was really interested in a digital solution for collecting dead animals, which sounds really weird. But you know, we brought a solution in. I helped develop it. I had a team of developers as well. And I was liaising with a group of stakeholders that I think were quite amazed with the technology, because, you know, when you are in the farming industry, technology isn't the go-to, but they really saw the value in what the solution could bring. And that was a breakthrough moment for me, because I orchestrated all of that and it's still successful till today. So yeah, I became a founder because other people believed in me. And I think that's definitely one thing that I would like to pass on to others. It's creating that change by believing in people and backing them when, you know, other people go, I don't think so. I see so many situations like that.
That bit where it was really hard at the beginning, you know, you're on LinkedIn calling people. How do you keep yourself going? Because that's a tough time in a business, isn't it?
Yeah, those were dark days for me. I'm not going to lie, I would never go back to them. One thing that I did was I monitored how many times I sent messages, what sort of messages I was sending, how many times I got responses. So I kind of relied on my data and analytics. And I worked out that I had a 1% success rate from a cold message. So I thought, okay, I just need to send out enough messages to get enough responses, to get enough meetings, and then secure business from that. So it became a numbers game for me. Mm-hmm. And I just continued to plug away, finding faster ways of doing the same thing. And I would say that kept me going. If I could do it again, I would probably build a community around me. I'd probably come to events like Climb and Founder Fest as well, which we're doing in June.
In a second. We'll get Don't to worry, I'm not going to leave it out.
Because if I look back now, most of the opportunities I've had have been through meeting people.
Yep.
And it's been really instant. And there's nothing that could replace that. Online doesn't even compare. Sending emails, making phone calls does not compare to meeting people. There's something about being in front of someone and building rapport that is just magical. And, you know, that's why I would definitely say people that are building a business, they need to build a community around them and be places. You need to be places. You need to rub shoulders with people. It's a contact sport. It's not something that you sit in your bedroom and do.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? People buy people. Mm. You know, that's been around forever and a day, you know, and but it is still a skill, but it's still tough, isn't it? It's that resilience to think, you know, the inherent belief in what you're doing.
Yeah.
How did you, because this is somebody coming to you and saying, build a business, as opposed to you having an idea. Where did that inner belief come that, you know, even with the data, you think, I'm going to make this happen? Where does that come from, do you think?
I think it's, you know, I think you need to look at what you are developing, look at what someone has and try and find that value. Mm-hmm. If you can see that value yourself and convince yourself of it, then you have the ability to convince others. If you can believe it, right? Mm-hmm. 'Cause, you know, it's sales, basically. Yeah. It is sales. And I never did any sales, right? Mm-hmm. I never did any sales before starting a business. Actually, tell a lie. I did the knocking on people's doors to sell double glazing.
Right.
0 hours contract thing. Yeah. that didn't go so well. But yeah, if you can convince yourself that what you're selling is valuable, you're not really selling, you're just opening opportunities for your clients or your prospects to benefit from something that maybe they've never heard of before,
yeah,
or were considering but are on the fence, and then it just takes someone to shift them to the right side. And so, yeah, it's really about conviction within yourself. I think if I was asked to sell something that I didn't believe in, I'd be terrible at it. And I'd feel so rubbish. I would probably fail miserably and just shrink into a ball. But I really believed in what this organization was doing. Yeah. I saw the growth rates as well. And I just saw the opportunity.
It's interesting because I meet so many people who say, I've never sold. We sell every day of the week.
We do.
Even if it's convincing your partner to get up and change the channel on the TV, that is selling. But I don't believe there's anybody, or there's not many people in this world who can sell things they don't believe in. And certainly, yeah, as we all evolve as human beings, that's becoming harder and harder. I think everyone, you can see it in people's eyes. So I think, to me, particularly for anybody running a business, sales is that getting people to do things that's right for them. You know,
yeah.
I think it's not just knowing your product's right, it's knowing that it's right for the customer as well. I don't think it's nearly impossible to sell something that people don't, that you might have the best product in the world, but if you don't want it,
yeah,
you're not going to buy it. You know, it's that mutual respect, isn't it, really?
You're right, yeah. There's a few books that I read on sales, like To Sell Is Human by Daniel Pink and Sales EQ as well. These books really transform the way that you think about selling. As you said, we're selling all the time, and we are. Like, if you work in a workplace, you're selling. Like, whenever you ask someone for something and you bring a reason, that's selling. When you give a presentation, you're selling. And so when you think about it in that way, it's not that hard. It just takes a bit of understanding what process you're going to use to do it.
Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? And I guess because you've come from a process and systems and data background, that helps enormously. I think a lot of people do think selling is pick up the phone, ring somebody, put the phone down, pick up, ring the next person. But it 100% isn't.
Yeah. Do you know what? I have a lot of sympathy for BDRs. when they phone my phone, I do try and go, you know, easy on them. And I try and have a conversation. Not every single one, but it is a hard job to do. But yeah, you won't really have that empathy unless you've been through it before.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned Founder Fest. We are going to get to that because you need to come back one to Founder Vine.
Okay.
How did that come about and what is it?
So Founder Vine was started 7 years ago. This was around the same time that I was building this business in the UK. And I met up with Izzy Obeng, who's my co-founder. And I met her through family, actually, through my auntie. And I saw Izzy was doing some amazing things.
This isn't the auntie with the bad knee that you haven't fixed, is
this,
it?
This is a different auntie.
Okay,
no.
Sorry, I'm just joking.
A different auntie. I hope she's not watching. She's probably going to remember and go, hey, what happened? But no, so I met Izzy and she was talking about, you know, building equity with people from underrepresented backgrounds and how the world could be a better place if people were given more opportunity to build businesses. And it really kind of resonated with me. And I also really loved the energy that Izzy had in terms of how she was able to convince people. You know, I feel like she's probably, you know, a natural salesperson. I don't think I'm a natural salesperson. The reason is, you know, I'm too technical sometimes. Get into the details. Not that she doesn't, but she has a natural charm about her, and she convinced myself and some other people that, hey, let's get together and do this thing called Foundervine. And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, I'm building a business and I'd love to help other people do that too. And so we embarked on an event called Founderfest, which was the very first thing that we did. And Izzy used to work at KPMG, and she managed to get KPMG to give us a very large space in their Canary Wharf office to do a massive event with 100 plus people. And the turnout was so great. Like, there was literally like no space to even stand at the back. And the event was focused on helping underrepresented founders and people with ideas turn those ideas into businesses and business pitches. And we noticed from that event that there's such a big desire for people who are overlooked to learn more and do more. And so, you know, from that point forwards, you know, I was very convinced that this is something that I want to spend time on. But I was part-time for a very long time because I was working on, you know, my other business. I think it came to a head when I realized that the opportunities that we were getting through Foundervine were just so big that I needed to focus more time on it. And so that's what I did. Today, we are one of the leading startup hubs in Europe. We have helped, how many founders? A thousand plus startups accelerated through our programs. And we've helped create 1,300 plus jobs and helped founders raise over £76 million in funding, which sounds crazy. Like if I look back and if I was to tell myself back then these stats, I'd say, what? How? But, you know, we've done it and we've been able to catalyze so much. And I really feel like we haven't even got started yet. I feel like there's so much opportunity that we can really be converting for people from underrepresented backgrounds.
And just as we've seen Climb evolve since 2023, how has FounderFest evolved and when is it?
That's good. So it's on the 21st of June. Make sure you get your ticket. And it's going to be in Liverpool Street, so right next to the station. No excuses for people that don't like traveling. And how has it evolved over the years? So it started off as a event with 100 plus people. Now it's probably going to be around 500 plus people. But we try to keep it intimate. We try to make sure that there is a feeling of I can walk up to anyone in this room and just start chatting. And another key point is we focus on the type of people we have speaking. We don't want to have just one type of person, even if that is, you know, just underrepresented people on the panels. We want to have a mix of everyone, genders, faiths, you know, place that they live in the UK or even abroad, whether they're investor or founder. We like to really create a mix, and that gives people in the audience a really good perspective on so many different things. We used to only have one stage. Now we've evolved to three stages. So we've got a start stage, we've got a scaling stage, and then a main stage as well. We never had a pitch competition. Now we do have a pitch competition. And we've had some really successful founders that have pitched at FounderFest and got investment off the back of the pitch they did and an investor coming up to them afterwards. So I feel like it's still evolving. It's obviously not as big as Climb. Climb is amazing. But you know, we're kind of cultivating the group and the community that we want to see. And it's not for any sort of commercial purpose for us. It's really about how do we create those connections and opportunities for people.
And that's one of the things that I love about what you're doing is that we're so aligned in so many of different things that we talk around. It's not just about selling a stack load of tickets for a load of money, and it's making it, you know, some will call it a safe space, but it's a space where people do connect and where people communicate. The feedback I get from FounderFest is that it is just really cool that people do build relationships there that will go on forever and have real outcome driven, which we're really at Climb is just amplifying that. What we want to do is bring all these amazing things together that are already existing, put them into another melting pot that makes those communities interconnect, because sadly there's a lot of noise out there of things that don't add value, and they are, you know, I'm not saying they're wrong, but they're not focused in the same way, you know. So, but it is an amazing achievement. What would people expect to see there? You know, if you talk about each of the stages or the sessions that you run, what if I was coming down to FounderFest, what would I see?
Yeah. So, and thank you for all the support that you're giving. And when we've had our chats, you've been so enthusiastic and come up with so many ideas about how we can work together. Mm-hmm. And I really like, you know, having these conversations with you.
Even if I'm normally in the car or legging it around the
even
country.
If you are in the car and I'm just
like,
where are you now, Gordon?
Don't walk in the dog or in the car, James, don't get hold of him.
So what can you expect from FounderFest? So if you're an early stage founder, maybe you haven't even started your business, there is the start stage for you where you can come along and understand a bit more about that beginning phase of building your business, which, you know, there's information on online that you can find very easily, but there's too much of it.
Yeah.
And so the start stage is almost like that stage you come to help focus your thoughts as you're starting your business.
But you deliver it again with people who've been and done it. It's not out of a book. This is people who genuinely know what they're talking about.
Exactly. Because the books are good, and but the books are usually 10 years late or yeah. something along those lines. You know, with AI, with the internet, with social media, things have changed so rapidly that you really need cutting edge knowledge.
Yeah.
And that stuff is not going to be in a university course. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, you know, live from people. Yep. And so, you know, that's one of the advantages of coming to events like FounderFest or Climb.
Yeah.
Then we have a scaling stage, which is for your more scaled up business. They've found their market fit. They understand how to get more clients. Maybe they've raised a little bit of investment, but they need to have an understanding of those kind of operational systems they need to put in place in order to scale. And so, you know, the scale stage is really focused on that. You know, how do you build a team? How do you sell internationally? All of those things. And again, from people that have been there and done it before, and also some investors as well, because it's really important to be able to secure that funding you need in order to scale your business. And then we've got pitching competition. We have had a lot of applications to pitch. We've had to sift through and wow. select some of the really good you know, pitches that have come through, and they'll be pitching on the day as well. Yeah, I think there's also a buzz at FounderFest that I find it very hard to explain this buzz to people, because you can't write it, and you can't even show it in a video. But once you're there and you're in it, yeah. you feel it. And you're smiling because I think there's probably something similar with Climb.
100%.
So yeah, it's hard to explain it. But once you come, you get it, and you will want to come again.
Yeah. I think it's because, like me, you're very passionate about this. It's not just about putting on a show. It's about sitting there at the end of the event and going, what have we achieved? Mm. And you look at it and go, and I see it in your eyes when we've been talking, is like, this matters, right?
Yeah.
It really is important.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's really important to be passionate about these things. And you can tell when an event is run by someone that's not passionate yeah. about it, because it feels very kind of too overly structured and not enough time to connect with people. And it's almost like tick box, done this session, done this session, done this session, without little thought on, you know, how people are actually going to benefit from it. So I think our event, that's the one thing that they share in common, is that passion, is that, you know, focus on impact and focus on the benefit of the people that are coming.
Yeah, absolutely. People I've spoken to who've been, say, is similar to the feedback we get. You've just got to go. That's what I hear all the time about FounderFest.
That should be our tagline.
Who's having this tagline?
It's got to be you.
You talk some fantastic statistics about what you've already done with FounderVine, and then the people that you've helped and the businesses created. There are a couple of businesses that stick with you, of you've seen them from that genesis come to you. Maybe underrepresented people like yourself were, who couldn't find any help, and that you have helped it to get on that ladder and go on and flourish, hopefully.
Yeah, so I've got hundreds of examples I could pull on, and I think a few stand out to me, not because they've raised the most money. I don't necessarily think that's always a good thing. I think a really successful business actually could bootstrap itself to the top. But obviously investment comes into it when you need to scale fast. So I'm not focusing per se on the investment raised, but there are a couple of examples I'd like to point out. So one of them is MyArk. It's like a fitness training platform for influencers that ordinarily would have been on like an Instagram, but Instagram doesn't really help you monetize that much, right? And actually they take more of the the value and the money instead of the influencers who are bringing the people that want to train on their platforms together. So MyArk really helps these fitness influencers sell programs to their following and really gets them the earnings that they really deserve. And there's a few case studies that he's got that shows people from underrepresented backgrounds get onto his platform and really kind of make really successful earnings off of that instead of that money maybe going to a YouTube or an Instagram. So I really, really like MyArk. We met them probably in 2020. And we gave them free space as part of the WeWork Diverse Founders Program. And he was so grateful for that space because he didn't really have a place to work out of during or shortly just after COVID hit. And I remember when, you know, we saw him at the WeWork, and that was after everyone come back from COVID and were like getting used to seeing people again. And he was really emotional about how much of an opportunity it was for us to put him on the program and give him that free space. So I really wanted to point him out, and he's really successful now. He's got a really large following in terms of all of the influencers on his platform. I think he was recently invested in by Morgan Stanley as well. He was on Times Square and the big billboard, which is fantastic. And I'm really happy for him. And, you know, he comes back to Found the Fest year on year. And, yeah, really kind of, he's always there. He loves it. Another founder is a lady named Natalie. She has created a sauce company, and it's Jamaican jerk sauce. Actually, it was created by her father, but she took it on and kind of, I guess, modernized it. And, you know, she is from an underrepresented background, underprivileged background as well. And I'd say maybe not from a background that would really understand business in the way that everyone else would, but she's come onto our accelerators. She's learned so much. She did her first ever pitch at a demo day after an accelerator that she was on. And she won it. She absolutely won it. And that was the first pitch that she had done. And I thought she was joking. I was like, there's no way that was your first pitch. But that was it was so amazing. And, you know, she won a 5-figure grant from us. And that was in collaboration with Lloyds Bank to change her manufacturing systems in over Christmas. And, you know, she's really benefited from that. And the thing I really love about her story the most is that she's become an advisor to other startups, to other people that want to get into business. And so that's that kind of full circle effect that we're trying to create with Foundervine. We don't want to just help people. We want to enable people to help others. And she, you know, has become an advisor to other businesses after coming to our events for years and going through an accelerator. And, you know, we even bring her back to be a judge on certain competitions as well. So yeah, I really, really love how she's developed. I could go on about so many businesses.
One of the things that strikes me is you've talked about underrepresented groups,
yeah,
and that you're clearly changing the dial as well. And the more people that you help, the more there are going to be to help each other, aren't there? And that hopefully you're not going to be the only one walking into the room, that, you know, you're not going to be the underrepresented group anymore because you're creating this huge community.
Absolutely. And I think the vision is that if someone from an underprivileged background has a great idea and the ability to pursue that idea, they've got the energy, they've got the passion, and they've got the drive, there should be no barriers in their way. They should be able to do that. That's best for society because they create things that we will all use. They will employ people that in their community that maybe would have been unemployable. Like, that's how we can create a lot of change.
I think what's interesting though, when you run something like Founder Fest and what we do with Climb, is you inspire the people to go into that room, into that festival. Mm. We do the same with Climb. And then those thousands of people who go through that door are inspired to inspire more people. Mm. They come out of events like yours with that magical kind of energy and go and tell another 10 people about it and go, this can be done. Because like us, it's creating stories. Yeah. That's all you're doing all the way through is the two stories that you've talked about, those founders, they're coming back into the cycle. And that's one of the things that the reason why we do climb outside of London is there isn't enough of those yet. Mm-hmm. And there isn't enough of them in the UK yet. And by what you're doing, what we're doing, those stories will amplify. Mm. You know, every single one of those hearts and minds that we touch will touch another 5 or 10. We're winning. Every day of the week, we are winning. And that's why these things are so important.
They're so important. And I'm really glad that we have something like Climb up in Leeds. I remember when I first heard about it, I thought it was like a rock climbing competition.
So did I, in fairness. I don't know how it turned into what it has turned into.
And now we've got a picture of a mountain behind us.
I thought it was a rock climbing competition. And people were like, hey, you really need to be at Climb. You really need to be there. And I was like,
I don't like mountains. I like climbs.
It's like, why? We're like, why is it called Climb? Yeah. But, you know, I'm now used to it. And I think it's such a good event. And I'm really looking forward to coming this year, by the way.
I'm looking forward to being here.
I'm really looking forward to it.
So here's the deal. How many you're pitching competition. So tell me about how many get through to the final on the day. What's that shaped like?
So we have about 100 applications to pitch. And then we have 8 people pitching on the day.
All 8 can come to Climb on me.
Awesome. On you?
Yeah.
Awesome.
All 8. Deal.
Right. Before he comes off with other ideas.
She hates this because I just make stuff up while we're doing this.
He's off and running. I can see his little brain he's wearing. Finally, you just said you were an accidental founder to begin with, but you've got a couple of businesses now behind you. Are there more in the pipeline? Are you now from an accidental founder, a serial founder, do you think?
Yes. Yeah, so
that's a yes.
So I'm not one to talk about things in general until they're fully formed, but there are things working in the background. There's things bubbling away in the background within Found the Vine that we're working on, and also outside of Found the Vine as well. But usually I kind of want things to be a bit more fully formed before they come out.
But the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. And I think once you get that itch to be an entrepreneur, you just see so many opportunities and you just keep going after things and you have so many ideas. I know Gordon is like that. Like every time I speak to him, he's like, so many ideas. Just sometimes I get off the call with you, I'm like, oh my God, I'm tired. Like so many ideas coming at you.
Try working with him.
Exactly. But I think once you become an entrepreneur, there's something about doing something once successfully and seeing that there's ways to do other things and so many problems that need to be solved that you just don't stop. Your mind is always racing. Like it's hard to sleep. Is when you wake up, you're like full of energy. You're like, oh, I need to do this and do this and do this. And oh, this person, I should get back to them on this thing. So there's always going to be something. I don't feel like I could actually go back to a normal 9 to 5. I'd probably just be too hyperactive to do that sort of thing anymore. I don't know.
But that's why the networks always matter. We interviewed somebody not so long ago and they were saying that, you know, within grasp, there'll always be somebody there who can help you achieve that different thing. Mm. It's not that mad that we're creating things. It's just getting access to those people so they can help you do it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if you've got a great network, you probably have not enough time in the day because mm-hmm. there's always an opportunity that you can speak to someone about. When I had a limited network, I was like, you know, not really that much opportunities around.
Yeah.
But now my network's grown. It's like, wow, like there's so many things that I could do with other people, and things that previously were impossible are made really possible by just knowing certain people.
Yeah, absolutely.
We wish you the very best of luck with FounderFest wait to see you at Climb in July. You'll be very tired by the end of all of that luck.
Well, I'm really inspired by it, so I feel like I'm going to have the energy. Thank you, though.
Good. We will see you in July. Join us again for another Conversations at the Summit.